diet. As we have said, you will lose the benefit of the known and yet undetected beneficial elements that are present in the low-glycemic fruits and vegetables. That is why we firmly believe that the Sugar Busters lifestyle is beyond Atkins. In summary, if you follow the general principles in Sugar Busters, cut sugar to trim fat, you can enjoy your meals without counting your zone portions or your calories within reason. If you get the sugar and other nutrients that your body requires from the nutrition-filled, low-glycemic carbohydrates, you won't get fat and unhealthy in the first place. Chapter 24, Alternative Sweeteners. There are now several alternative sweeteners on the market. Some are nutritive and some are non-nutritive. Nearly all are commonly referred to as artificial sweeteners. Some are not found in nature, while others are concentrated forms of natural sugars. One, not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, to be marketed as an artificial sweetener, is actually a naturally occurring herb. All of these sweeteners have one thing in common. They do not have a fattening or blood sugar elevating effect like sucrose, brown sugar, molasses, honey, or corn syrup. The purpose of replacing these natural sugars is to provide a sweet product that does not have a fattening or blood sugar elevating effect like the natural sugars. The most common question asked about any of these sweeteners is whether they are safe. Our survey of the technical literature indicates that the FDA is quite thorough and conservative in its approach to approving any new sweetener. The FDA also has a history of performing continuing studies on these sweeteners in response to almost any new question or accusation that may arise. Cyclamates, for example, have been taken off the market in response to some fairly weak indications that very high dosages of the sweeteners, when given to animals, caused potential problems. We acknowledge the need to be conservative when it comes to approving new sweeteners and concur that the testing should continue. We are satisfied, however, that the products currently approved by the FDA can be considered safe unless and until new scientific studies prove otherwise. Remember that, as with almost any substance, it is the size of the dose that counts. Even table sugar, consumed in huge quantities, can have a harmful effect on many people's bodies by helping to cause obesity, diabetes, and many other related diseases. Should you just eliminate added sweeteners of any type to achieve the optimum diet? Ideally, yes. Practically, no. First, you cannot dodge them all. They are in most of the manufactured products on the market. Second, now that humankind has been exposed to the pleasures of eating something, besides fruit, that tastes sweet, it is very unlikely that most people will voluntarily forego that pleasure. We do recommend that you eliminate as much added sugar or alternative sweetener as you can, and try to satisfy your desire for sweets by getting them from the natural sugars that are present in fruits and vegetables. Let's discuss some of the alternative sweeteners that are on the market today. Aspartame. Primarily marketed as Equal or NutraSweet, aspartame was approved by the FDA in 1981. It is made up of two amino acids, aspartic acid and phenylalanine, and is digested and metabolized in the same manner as other ingested proteins. Aspartame is approximately 200 times sweeter than an equal amount of table sugar, and although it is technically a nutritive sweetener, so little is required that it, or the slight amounts of other additives such as maltodextrin or dextrose, have an insignificant effect on blood sugar. The FDA says aspartame is one of the most thoroughly studied sweeteners on the market. The FDA has yet to substantiate any of the thousands of accusations that have been leveled by various individuals or groups, some of whom may have motives to remove all alternative sweeteners from the market. The one potential problem that was acknowledged early on is that the phenylalanine in aspartame can be bad for anyone having a rare hereditary disease called phenylketonuria, PKU. These people should avoid eating anything containing phenylalanine. Also, aspartame does not hold up well when exposed to high heat. Saccharin. Primarily marketed as Sweeten Low, saccharin came on the market decades ago before FDA approval was necessary. It cannot be absorbed by the body and is thus a non-nutritive sweetener. Saccharin is 300 times sweeter than an equal amount of table sugar. It was found to cause bladder cancer in rats that were fed huge amounts of saccharin, but since it has been used for so long with no apparent problems arising in humans, the FDA has allowed saccharin to remain on the market. Acesulfame potassium, acesulfame K. Primarily marketed as Sunet or Sweet One, this sweetener is in hundreds of sugar-free products, including some diet drinks and chewing gums. It is approximately 200 times sweeter than an equal amount of table sugar. The FDA has declared the product safe. Of course, it should not be used by anyone on a potassium-limited diet or anyone with any allergies related to potassium-bearing products. Sucralose. Primarily marketed as Splenda, sucralose was approved by the FDA in 1998. It is estimated to be approximately 600 times sweeter than table sugar. Sucralose is made from sugar, but the chemical alteration means that it contains molecules that are too large for it to be absorbed into the body. It is thus a non-nutritive sweetener. It can be utilized for products requiring cooking or freezing. Fructose. Fructose is a natural fruit sugar, but it has a glycemic index of only 22, about one-third that of table sugar. It causes a lower elevation in blood sugar and a lower requirement for insulin than an equivalent amount of table sugar. For those who insist on a natural sweetener, it is a reasonable substitute for table sugar. There are also sweeteners derived from fruit sugars or fruit concentrates, such as kiwi, dates, etc., which are gaining in popularity. Stevia. Stevia ribaudiana. Stevia is an herb that is native to South America and has been used there as a sweetener for centuries. The Japanese have used stevia for over 30 years. It has not yet been approved by the FDA as an artificial sweetener and can only be marketed in health food stores as a dietary supplement. Stevia is marketed in both a powdered and liquid form and can require some testing by the individual user to determine how much is required to replace a given amount of sugar. It is, however, another natural sweetener from which to choose. What's the bottom line on this group of alternative sweeteners? They all impart a lower glycemic effect on our bodies than table sugar, and this helps control insulin and thus weight, as well as the effects of diabetes. None of the alternative sweeteners make any significant nutritive contribution. But the same is true for nutritionless, empty-calorie table sugar, which does cause a significant rise in blood sugar. We agree with the American Heart Association's recommendation that artificial sweeteners can be used by diabetics and persons on a weight loss diet. We do believe that the alternative sweeteners should be used in moderation and in conjunction with an otherwise healthy diet containing ample amounts of low-glycemic, high-fiber carbohydrates like those recommended in Sugar Busters. Chapter 25. To Drink or Not to Drink. Research on the effects of alcohol consumption has increased significantly in the last several years. There is broad acceptance in the American and international medical community that the consumption of moderate amounts of alcohol will, in fact, lower the mortality rate of drinkers versus non-drinkers. See Figure 8 on your PDF companion. For those of you who do not drink, we are not recommending that you start, because an excess consumption of alcohol causes many more problems than a moderate consumption appears to help. Many are extolling, in particular, the greater benefit of wine rather than beer or hard liquor. European medical researchers have led this effort. Noted French epidemiologist Serge Renaud claims, "It's well documented that a moderate intake of alcohol prevents heart disease by as much as 50%, and further that there is no other drug that's as efficient as the moderate intake of alcohol." Research by epidemiologist Morten Grønbæk of Denmark concludes that consuming alcohol in the form of wine versus beer or hard liquor is important in lowering the risk of dying from cancer. Other Europeans currently active in research on the effects of alcohol consumption are researchers Serenello Rotondo and Giovanni Di Gaetano of Italy, Jean-Marc Orgogoso and Joseph Vercantaran of France, and Elias Kosteras of Greece. The collective wisdom of these researchers confirms the benefits of some alcohol in one's diet, and several believe that the polyphenols and bioflavonoids, both strong antioxidants, in red wine make it particularly effective in fighting problems such as cardiovascular disease, prostate and breast cancer, and dementia, including Alzheimer's disease. Dr. Jean-Marc Orgogoso, chairman of the Department of Neurology at University Hospital Pellegrin in Bordeaux, France, has done studies on the effect of the drinking habits of 3,777 people aged 65 and older. Dr. Orgogoso found that of the 60% who drank regularly, 95% of their consumption was red wine, the moderate drinkers had an 80% reduction in dementia and a 75% reduction in Alzheimer's disease after the first 5 years of the study compared with the non-drinkers. As they aged, the benefit lessened somewhat, but they still showed a 50% reduction in the incidence of Alzheimer's disease 8 years into the study. Dr. Orgogoso defined moderate consumption as 2 to 3 4.5-ounce glasses of wine per day for women and 3 to 4 glasses for men. Other researchers generally define moderate consumption as 2 to 3 3.5-ounce glasses of wine per day. Since many of the studies have shown significant statistical improvements in mortality rates for moderate drinkers, and further encouraging results in laboratory and animal studies, we suggest that you stay tuned for additional reports in these and related areas. Remember, however, we are not recommending that you start drinking alcohol if you do not drink. Many of the cardiovascular benefits can be derived by taking aspirin and drinking a glass of purple grape juice. You can lose weight more quickly if you do not drink alcohol at all, but if you do continue to drink in moderation, avoid beer and sugar-laden mixers. Note that while researchers see positive health effects from drinking moderate amounts of alcohol, the situation reverses itself quite quickly once alcohol consumption increases. Not only does excessive drinking endanger your own health, but it can also cause both heartache and physical harm to those you are around or who are on the road with you. Chapter 26, Fat versus Low-Fat Diets and Products. The eat some fat versus eat low-fat debate is finally getting some national attention, and we are pleased to see this happen. The clinical evidence for the health benefits of eating very restricted amounts of fat has been lacking. The same lack of evidence exists for the health benefits of diets very high in carbohydrates. The evidence indicates that while many of our forebears ate high-fat diets, they, as well as those who ate near-vegetarian diets or a seasonal mixture of both, survived and ultimately outperformed the other species on Earth. It has only been in recent history that we have been told to severely restrict our intake of fat. An article in Science magazine did a good job of revealing that the government's decision to recommend a significant restriction on fat consumption was a political decision rather than one based on clinical or scientific evidence. What is surprising is how quickly and how thoroughly the government and the general populace bought the fat is bad message, resulting in a 16% drop in fat grams consumed. The results of this political decision, made 25 years ago, have had many ramifications. A huge multi-billion-dollar industry built on low-fat products has been established. The fats eliminated from the products have often been replaced by nutritionless refined sugars and highly refined flours. Overweight and obesity-related diseases have become national epidemics and have surely shortened and worsened the lives of millions of people. Overweight and obesity epidemics have also affected our children. A very recent advisory by the American Heart Association said that despite the growing availability and popularity of foods made with fat substitutes, there is no evidence that low or reduced fat foods are effective weight loss tools. For many years, people thought that eating fat increased the risk for breast cancer. New studies are not bearing this out. According to Melanie Polk, Director of Nutrition at the American Institute for Cancer Research in Washington, D.C., the research is not as strong as originally thought. The evidence is much stronger for other lifestyle factors. But, as you will learn elsewhere, the fatter you become, the higher will be your risk for breast cancer. The fat that we eat turns to fat argument has been easily believed by our politicians as well as the general population. As previously mentioned in Chapter 9, the surprising thing is that this fat is bad line of thinking was bought almost unanimously by professional nutritionists and dietitians, despite evidence in the medical literature and textbooks that it is much easier to convert available carbohydrates to body fat. With our population encouraged for decades to eat very high amounts of all forms of carbohydrates, our bodies have consistently had excess carbohydrates available to be stored as fat. Since few doctors in America studied nutrition, they, as a group, seldom disputed the nutrition profession's dogma that it is predominantly the fat that turns to fat. As mentioned previously, the two ships, professions, just passed in the night. It would appear that dawn is imminent and that each ship will now see the other, and mankind's knowledge regarding what foods work best for people performing at various levels of activity will be significantly advanced. To obtain the most beneficial effect from the foods we eat, we need some fat in our diets. Fatty acids are necessary for many chemical activities in the body that affect growth, metabolism, manufacture of cell membranes and sex hormones, and transport of the vitamins A, D, E, and K. Fats also add the flavor and texture that provide both pleasure and a feeling of fullness after a meal. The ability to provide the feeling of fullness may be why a few nuts consumed at the end of a meal seem to satisfy the desire for a sugar-laden dessert. There are three types of fat: monounsaturated, polyunsaturated, and saturated fat. The first two have been demonstrated to have some beneficial effects, such as raising the HDL, good cholesterol, and or lowering the LDL, bad cholesterol. The jury is still out on how much saturated fat can be consumed safely over long periods of time. Consumption of saturated fat with a meal of high glycemic, low fiber carbohydrates still appears to us to be a risk we need not take unless or until future clinical studies prove otherwise. Saturated fat can average about 10% of your calories, but do not consistently overindulge in saturated fat. We recommend consumption of monounsaturated fats, like the fat in olive oil, avocados, seeds, and nuts. We also recommend the polyunsaturated fats, like those found in cold water fish, walnuts, and vegetable oils, corn, safflower, and soybean. In conclusion, regarding fat, we think that some fat in the diet is beneficial, as it was for our ancestors. A target of 30% of total calories from fat, or even 40%, is reasonable if most of the fat is monounsaturated and polyunsaturated. However, the carbohydrate content of a diet should always be of low glycemic and high fiber fruits, vegetables, and whole grain products. Listen to Chapter 11 for more discussion on the correct carbohydrates to eat. Chapter 27, Conclusion. The Sugar Busters lifestyle is not another high-fat, low-carbohydrate fad diet. The Sugar Busters lifestyle is a balanced, time-tested nutritional lifestyle. It is logical, practical, and reasonable, and involves making healthy and nutritious choices about the foods we eat. The Sugar Busters lifestyle supports removing unnecessary fat, especially too much saturated fat, from our diet. However, we also support eating moderate amounts of lean, trimmed meats, even red meats, which are healthy sources of protein and fat. Because we recommend avoiding refined sugar and processed grain products, most of you will eat somewhat fewer carbohydrates than you are currently consuming. That is okay, but we do not recommend that you severely restrict carbohydrate consumption. More important, success on the Sugar Busters lifestyle involves a commitment to choosing correct carbohydrates. This is a change from mainstream nutritional thinking, which does not differentiate between the metabolic effects of the various carbohydrates. In healthcare, transportation, telecommunications, and other fields, tremendous strides have been and are continuing to be made. This has not been so for nutrition and dieting. Our ancestors ate better, often out of necessity, than we do today. How they ate is why our digestive system has evolved to what it is today. Sure, vitamins and other food supplements have improved, and we constantly get to eat a variety of foods with their varying vitamins and minerals. But in general, the way we eat today has caused our health to deteriorate markedly and has prevented a significant increase in life expectancy for middle-aged people. Refining and processing most of what we eat has been an unfortunate nutritional disservice, including the introduction of refined sugar. Our health has suffered as a result. The evidence for this deterioration has been rather obvious for decades. Most insulin-dependent diabetics gain weight, and their cholesterol continues to rise no matter how carefully they follow their doctor's instructions. Many individuals have given up meat entirely, only to have their cholesterol levels increase and their vascular disease progress rapidly. Most nutritionists and dietitians looked but did not see. Duffy and Montagnac began to see. However, because they were not professionally trained in nutrition, many so-called professionals scoffed at or ridiculed them and even suggested they were charlatans. Most of our body fat is from ingested sugar, carbohydrates, not ingested fat. This is driven by the effects of insulin, aptly proven in the insulin-resistant diabetic who gains still more weight as insulin injections are begun. By modulating insulin secretion through diet, individuals are able to significantly influence body fat, cholesterol, diabetes, and the progression of arteriosclerosis and its subsequent complications. In addition, diet can regulate glucagon secretion, which has additional beneficial effects on fat metabolism that make it easier for the body to utilize previously stored fat. The world of nutrition is not flat, but round. Previous concepts appeared plausible, but now we have the scientific basis to prove them wrong. Eating should be an enjoyable and pleasurable experience and contribute to our performance and health. Many have written about refined sugar and its harmful effects. We have taken this premise, verified it by current and historical data, and expanded it to include our belief that insulin is the key. The nutritional and dietary concepts presented in Sugar Busters are consistent with achieving ideal levels of insulin and glucagon secretion. In addition to pleasuring our palates, the concepts proposed in Sugar Busters should be good news for the cattle ranchers, sheep ranchers, hog farmers, dairy farmers, and egg producers who recently have been much maligned by various health and nutrition groups. These foods are good for us today, just as they were good for our distant ancestors. The Sugar Busters lifestyle is simple to understand and easy to apply. Unlike regimens that call for constant counting and calculating, and best of all, it is both healthy and satisfying. With our approach, countless individuals already have experienced weight loss and a reduction in cholesterol, as well as the improvement in performance that is so vital to everyone's success. We feel the same opportunity is available to you by following the recommendations on nutrition and diet we offer in Sugar Busters. Bon appetit. Chapter 28. Major Restaurants Do Sugar Busters. Your PDF companion contains recipes from well-known restaurants in many of the major cities in the United States as well as across the globe. Some of the recipes are quick and simple to prepare. For those of you who enjoy spending a creative afternoon in the kitchen, other recipes are more demanding in the acquisition of the ingredients as well as the preparation of the final product. For listeners who do not spend much time in the kitchen and eat out frequently, these recipes can act as a roadmap for where you might go to order a flavorful and healthy meal should you happen to be in one of these cities. Many of you have benefited from just reading the many recipes we included in our original book, Sugar Busters, Cut Sugar to Trim Fat, that came from major restaurants in New Orleans. And when you came to the city, you could pick your favorite recipe and have it prepared by the local master, him or herself. For those of you who remain strapped for time but do cook at home, we refer you to our Sugar Busters Quick and Easy Cookbook, which contains flavorful recipes that generally can be prepared in 30 minutes or less. Chapter 29, Myths. One thing we would like to do is dispel some of the concepts that have been around for so long that they are almost universally believed, even by the majority of doctors. The truth is that most doctors, dietitians, and other health professionals know very little about the complicated interplay of carbohydrates, fats, and proteins once these foods enter the body. This is an area where dogma has held sway, or views have been conveniently retained for many years, and only a few individuals have challenged these misconceptions. Let's examine some of these views more closely. Calories and weight loss. What exactly is a calorie, and is it so important? A calorie is the amount of energy, heat, needed to raise the temperature of 1 kilogram of water 1 degree centigrade, from 15 to 16 degrees centigrade. In other words, it's a measure of the amount of energy required to achieve a certain result. But how does this relate to the human body, and what does it mean for us? If we were all internal combustion engines or boilers, then it would be easy to see how this concept would be important, because whatever amount of fuel went into our engine would come out as approximately an equivalent amount of energy. Theoretically, if one consumed an amount of food containing a certain number of calories, the body would have to expend this energy in a given period of time to remain calorie neutral. If not, the assumption has always been that the body will convert these excess calories into stored energy, fat, that would be released at a later date when the body would need more energy than it had consumed. This has been the standard theory for decades, and unfortunately has been well accepted by most nutritional professionals. In this model, as calorie requirements are exceeded by intake, fat will undoubtedly accumulate. Most of these premises were based on research performed decades ago, research that was not verified by other investigators or subjected to the type of scrutiny and continued refinement that are usual with most scientific research performed today. Webb reviewed a number of studies and determined that energy intake, calories, is not sufficient to predict weight gain or loss in any given individual. Nevertheless, the caloric theory is widely accepted and has become deeply ingrained in the public psyche. Fortunately, individuals have not evolved like engines, and caloric requirements and consumption never were meant to be in perfect equilibrium or so finely balanced that we should be overly concerned about small variations in either direction. In human beings, body weight is regulated by integrated and well-coordinated mechanisms that seek a dynamic balance between food intake and energy expenditure. And the truth is that no one quite yet understands exactly how the body achieves this complex process. We now know that decreasing the amount of calories in the diet only leads to temporary weight loss, so there has to be a compensating process or another explanation. Research has shown that when we diet and lose weight, the body adjusts its energy requirements downward and thus needs to expend less energy to run itself. This presents a form of resistance to maintaining a reduced weight even while maintaining exactly the same low-calorie diet. This startling phenomenon accounts for the poor long-term results of most dietary treatments of obesity. We also get miserable eating less, and few of us will voluntarily live with deprivation for the remainder of our lives. We will ultimately give in to one of life's greatest pleasures, which is eating in normal quantities. Our view is that calories per se are not as important as the type of foods we eat, how we eat them, and what metabolic processes control their assimilation. What we do know is that normal, even significant amounts of the proper types of food can be consumed for indefinite periods without causing weight gain. Fats and weight gain. Because fats provide more calories per gram, 9, than either carbohydrates or protein, 4, it has always been a popular myth that fats are bad. This has been driven in large part by the calorie-counting myth, that is, fat grams result in more calories than carbohydrate grams, therefore eating fewer fat and more carbohydrate grams will result in consuming fewer overall calories and a healthier diet. This reasoning has given tremendous impetus to the consumption of certain types of carbohydrates, such as pasta, potatoes, and rice. This trend has now reached unprecedented proportions in this country with the current pasta craze. The fact is that fats, in and of themselves, do not necessarily cause weight gain. Moreover, fats are vitally important to the body in many ways, from the production of hormones to the absorption of vitamins. It is true that many of us consume more fat than we need, but this is largely due to the fact that fats are present in so many food items that have become popular in this country, such as donuts, fried chicken, and French fries. Therefore, although consumption of a reasonable amount of fat is healthy, we agree that it is generally necessary to trim the large amount of saturated fats consumed in the normal American diet. As the ingestion of fats, as well as carbohydrates, may lead to changes in cholesterol, it is very important to point out that some fats lower cholesterol and others raise it. For instance, monounsaturated fatty acids contained in foods such as olive oil, canola oil, peanut oil, and pecans may in fact be helpful for patients with coronary artery disease or with a high risk of developing coronary disease. Reliable studies have confirmed that low rates of coronary artery disease occur in Mediterranean countries, where the population consumes a large percentage of their calories as these monounsaturated fats, primarily in the form of olive oil. Other studies show similar beneficial effects for walnuts and almonds, both rich in monounsaturated fats. However, saturated fats and many polyunsaturated fats are believed to lead to an increased risk for development of coronary disease. In a recent study where patients were randomly assigned to receive a Mediterranean-type diet that was high in vegetables, fresh fruit, whole grains, and olive oil compared to a standard diet, there was a 79% decrease in major cardiovascular events after 27 months in the Mediterranean group. Yet, the standard diet recommended for patients with or at risk for coronary disease is to consume 70% to 85% of calories from carbohydrates with very low amounts of fat and protein. It is very possible that this may be the wrong recommendation for many patients, because such a diet can actually increase triglyceride levels and decrease high-density lipoprotein, HDL cholesterol, the protective cholesterol. The higher the HDL, the better. Another class of fats that may be beneficial for heart disease is the omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids found in fish oils and flaxseed. These oils decrease triglyceride levels and decrease the stickiness of platelets in the bloodstream. Elevated triglycerides and sticky platelets can contribute to arteriosclerosis. Our view, then, is that not all fats are the same, and they should not be considered as having the same effect when eaten. Many, in fact, are actually good for you, as discussed in Chapter 26. Cholesterol. A closely related myth is the cholesterol story. Cholesterol was not a major consideration until the early 1970s. At that time, guidelines were first issued in the United States warning against the dangers of butter, eggs, lard, and other animal fats. This produced the current trend of classifying foods as either healthy or unhealthy. The relationship between fats, triglycerides, cholesterol, and heart disease was originally presented in the Seven Countries Study. This study recommended that fat intake be reduced to 30% of total energy intake. However, the study revealed that in the Netherlands, the percentage of energy derived from fat was 48%, but the population's life expectancy was one of the highest in Europe. Similarly, in Crete, fat consumption was 40% of total energy intake, but the incidence of heart disease was one of the lowest in Europe. These inconsistencies have never been satisfactorily explained. Although we agree that very high cholesterol levels, more than 300 milligrams per deciliter, are significantly related to coronary artery disease. Furthermore, the clinical studies directed at lowering blood lipids, including cholesterol, have shown no consistent decrease in death rates in spite of success in lowering cholesterol. In some studies, more than half the patients with coronary disease had cholesterol levels below 200 milligrams per deciliter. The message is, in most instances, that total cholesterol alone is not a reliable indicator for the risk of cardiovascular disease. Chapter 30. Frequently Asked Questions. The following are questions that have been asked frequently since publication of the original Sugar Busters, Cut Sugar to Trim Fat. Question 1. Most doctors and nutritionists still say it is calories consumed versus calories burned that determines weight gain or loss. Why do you say otherwise, and what is your evidence? Answer 1. We say it is calories consumed versus calories utilized by the body. The body metabolizes the calories in some foods differently than in other foods. We have observed in ourselves and in others that the intake of low glycemic carbohydrates or even calorie-dense meats or plant fats such as olive oil helps provide a greater long-term weight loss compared to lower total calorie intake of high glycemic carbohydrates. Clinical trials have shown that the body mass index came out lower for subjects who were fed diets of equal calories but lower glycemic index carbohydrates. Question 2. How much protein is too much or dangerous? Answer 2. We find no research that shows that a diet of 30% protein is harmful except for people who have pre-existing kidney disease. On the other hand, to eat 50% protein, plus the associated fat, means one would likely miss out on a sufficient quantity of vitamins, minerals, fiber, and other nutrients normally consumed in a diet with a higher percentage of fruits and vegetables. Question 3. Is whole milk unhealthy, and will it make you gain weight? Answer 3. It is healthy, and consumed in the same quantity as skim milk, should not make you gain weight. Whole milk will, however, add to the total saturated fat in your diet if all other food consumption remains the same. Question 4. Which is healthier to eat, butter or margarine? Answer 4. Since many margarines still contain trans fats, the bad fats, we would say you would be safer choosing butter unless the margarine specifically says it contains no trans fats. However, unlike margarine, a very small quantity of salted butter can impart a flavor enhancement not achievable with margarines. By the way, if you use unsalted butter, you may inadvertently use a larger quantity while trying to achieve the same flavor enhancement. Question 5. Since fiber is not found in meats, will a diet of only 40% carbohydrate contain enough fiber? Answer 5. Yes, but only if the carbohydrates are, as recommended in Sugar Busters, predominantly the low glycemic index, high fiber kind. Question 6. How long can a person safely and successfully remain on the Sugar Busters lifestyle? Answer 6. Forever. Chapter 31. Sugar Busters Products. In response to the many early and continuing requests we received to develop and offer products that would be acceptable for anyone following the Sugar Busters lifestyle, we are now marketing a variety of foods in certain areas of the United States. To determine if the foods are available in your particular area, visit the new website at sugarbusterfoods.com, which is controlled by the same people who market Camellia brand products, our new licensee, who oversee the manufacturing and distribution of the products. If the products are not available in your local supermarket, request that the store or area manager obtain the products. There are other books now available that recommend the consumption of lower glycemic index foods. In our opinion, the line of products offered under the Author's Choice, Sugar Busters brand, should be compatible on several of these diets, such as the Zone, Protein Power, or even the later phases of the Atkins diet. Of course, beyond the diets just mentioned, we firmly believe these products would also be good for anyone interested in a healthy eating pattern. The products should be particularly useful to diabetics who, once beginning a low-glycemic way of eating, will want to have their doctor monitor their new, lower medication requirements. The following products are being manufactured as Sugar Busters Author's Choice brand foods. 7 types of 100% whole wheat, whole grain breads, rolls, and or pita. 6 types of 100% whole wheat pastas. 5 types of sugar-free salad dressings. 1 type of sugar-free mayonnaise. 6 flavors of no-sugar-added sports drinks. Refresher. 4 flavors of no-sugar-added ice cream. 4 flavors of sugar-free pops, frozen ice bars. 6 flavors of no-sugar-added yogurts. Chapter 32, Sugar Busters Support Groups. If you're listening to Sugar Busters, you must be motivated to lose weight and or improve your blood chemistry. Your new knowledge changes your attitude about the way that you eat and what happens when you eat. Can your initial motivation, attitude, and success alone keep you from lapsing into your old, fat-accumulating way of eating? For many of you, the answer is yes. For others, it is more difficult to avoid the ever-present temptations to stray from the new lifestyle. What can best fuel your perseverance? This chapter is for those who would like a little help in not yielding to temptation. Countless individuals have been able to lose weight and remain at their desired weight by following Sugar Busters. Others have found encouragement and support on the Sweet Talk Plus board of the Sugar Busters website, www.sugarbusters.com, which provides an online way to exchange ideas on recipes, legal foods, and answers for specific problems. But what about individuals who need even more help? We think that a support group just might be the answer, and we want to provide you with a plan for starting a support group and ideas to make it effective. There are strong forces that work against our initial motivation. A holiday or family celebration can cause us to interrupt our dietary regimen. Other life events that factor into our failed attempts are family and relationship problems, difficulty at the job, hectic schedules, and even bouts with depression. We also may remember that we constantly experienced previous failures at dieting. Of course, we have been given the wrong information on how to lose weight. Lower your fat intake rather than choose the correct carbohydrates. Why might you want to use a support group? A support group can help provide its members with an opportunity for mutual growth and change. Members share similar difficulties and feelings, offering a sense of being in the same boat. The group affords members the experience of learning that others are facing the same troublesome problems. The exchange of knowledge and ideas will promote progress. Members can merge their goals with the optimistic goals of others in the group to move forward. A support group also provides encouragement when members encounter roadblocks, like the occasional plateaus discussed in Chapter 22, and offers different perspectives to success in meeting goals. A support group can be as structured or as informal as members desire. For example, two or more individuals can meet to walk together several times a week and talk about their progress on Sugar Busters. Or the support group can be a weekly or monthly meeting at a set location with several or many members, a designated leader, and a planned agenda. Either group can be tremendously successful for those involved. Although there can be great flexibility in format, there are several time-tested rules that should be followed in any support group. One goal for the group should be to create a warm, non-judgmental atmosphere so that members can feel free to talk without embarrassment. Derogatory comments should not be allowed. Confidentiality must be respected to foster an atmosphere of trust among members. Keeping personal disclosures confidential is essential. Avoid giving medical opinions. That advice should be left to the medical profession. Group members can, however, relate their own personal experiences of health improvement from the Sugar Busters' way of eating. Rotate group leadership. Sharing in this task will give everyone a sense of belonging and participation. One of the most important roles of the group leader is to encourage participation by all members, but at the same time, not force anyone to share their personal experiences unless they feel comfortable doing so. The group leader should try to keep the discussions interesting and lively by not allowing anyone, including the leader, to dominate the conversation. A statement like, "Let's hear from someone else about this topic," can be effective in moving the discussion along. To get started, get the core organizers together and choose from the following suggestions and guidelines, taking time at the first meeting to decide on a preliminary format that can be fine-tuned at future meetings. Number 1. Choose a group leader and a group name and discuss leader rotation. 2. Decide on how large you want the group to be and solicit members through friends, work, church, social groups, and exercise facilities. 3. Decide on a meeting place, members' homes, church, school, or library facilities. 4. Decide on the time and frequency of meetings. 5. Collect contact information, telephone numbers, home addresses, and email addresses. 6. Discuss group policies such as confidentiality and respect for the opinion of others. 7. Decide on a format for meetings. Having a format will help to bring more ideas and topics for discussion. These guidelines usually enhance the effectiveness of most support groups. However, after business is taken care of, then it's time for encouragement, support, cohesion, and most of all, progress to begin. Normally, the level of lively discussion and exchange of ideas will increase in future meetings. An important thing to remember is that you are not in the group to fix someone else. Rather, you are participating in the group to gain insight into your own behavior, receive and give feedback, support, knowledge, and encouragement to each other. We offer the following ideas for format and discussion to get you started. Begin the first group discussion by asking members to briefly tell their story, but do not force anyone to talk until they feel comfortable in doing so. Discuss how progress in weight loss will be discussed. Many individuals report 3 numbers: initial weight, current weight, and desired weight. Have a Sugar Busters book available for reference at meetings. Members should be encouraged to bring to the meeting articles on the health benefits of different fruits, vegetables, and grains, new ideas for discussion, product information, or recipes from the Sweet Talk board. Bring seasonal Sugar Busters recipes. Compile a group list of precipitating events or feelings that coincided with overeating or cheating. Patterns of behavior may begin to become evident. These psychological causes for eating problems can become an ongoing subject for discussion during group meetings. If some members desire, initiate a buddy system so that members can call each other during the week if eating problems occur. Limit refreshments to non-sugar sweetened drinks. Occasionally, perhaps every other month, have a potluck supper with members bringing their favorite Sugar Busters dish with copies of the recipe for all. Be sure to plan so that there is just enough food to go around. And remember, no second helpings except on green leafy salads. The leader should prepare a short opening statement that can be used at the beginning of each meeting that will help members to reaffirm their commitment to the Sugar Busters way of eating and their belief in the strength of the group endeavor. As improvements in weight and health become visible, the group will bond and become more of a team, and no one will want to let the team down by straying from his or her individual goals. This is a great motivational enhancement provided through group team dynamics. If some members are more competitive than others, let them simply exceed their previously stated goals. Make no mistake, Sugar Busters is a way of life that is also very healthy. This is precisely why so many who have tried Sugar Busters stick with it, regardless of whether or not they need to lose weight. On Sugar Busters, we feel better. And in the Sugar Busters support group, we feel better together. This concludes the new Sugar Busters. Please visit our website, www.tantor.com, for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers. Or call toll-free 877-7-TANTOR to request a catalog.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.